Hello and welcome to the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. I am Gary Gramling, and I just want to say, you know that Peaches and Herb song, Reunited? I never understood the meaning of that song until this very moment, as I'm joined by Andy Benoit.
I saw my mother listen to that song 2 years ago with a look on her face that made me realize that my mother maybe knew people before my father, maybe knew other men at some point in her life. My dad is not the only boyfriend she's ever had.
That's a horrifying.
I've never seen her look like that. It was horrifying.
It's a horrifying realization.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. It's glad to have you back on the Monday show, Andy. As you folks probably know by now, we are rotating the cast as the season goes on, but Andy and I are back for this one. We're back on Thursdays too, but at this very moment, we are going to break down all the Week 2 action, and we are going to start with the Sunday night game, which was
awesome.
It was horrifying. I don't want to say that's the most violent game I've ever seen, because I've seen games with bigger hits and uglier plays and stuff like that, but I feel like there was a stretch of like 20 plays where somebody just came up, even if it wasn't a big hit, just somebody came up holding an arm or limping off the field or something like that. I've never seen anything quite like that.
Yeah, it was violent football. You know, some of it, there was a Sidney Jones hit that got extolled by, it was on Austin Hooper, and it got extolled by Collinsworth, and it was a great hit. Well, let me put it this way, it was a great hit a few years ago. It should have been flagged, though, and that kind of stuff makes me a little uneasy, because I think the NFL really does need, I know not everybody likes it, and I'm kind of a purist, but you have to embrace it, because the player safety thing's not going away. So, you know, I guess you don't feel like, there was a Steeler-Raven game a few years ago where it was a Monday night game back in 2008, and it was week four, and there were legitimate discussions after that game about, oh boy, maybe they need to change the rules. Football is too violent, because it was just a game of relentless, nonstop, all-out physical hitting. This was not quite like that, but it makes you feel, in this day and age, it makes you feel uncomfortable a little bit like that.
It does, and yeah, that Sidney Jones hit in particular, it's when you see the guy, the smaller guy, lower his helmet and just go in like a missile. It just, yeah, makes it a little bit queasy. But the game itself ended up being just
spectacular. That's what I was saying by awesome.
It was spectacularly, the finish was huge, and it was just kind of, it was two teams kind of surviving for a while, and then we had that big finish there. But let's start with the Falcons. Let's start with the winning team. And one thing that stuck out to me in this one, Andy, was I feel like this was the best I've seen the Falcons defensive line play in a very, very long time.
It was. It was the best they've played in a while. And that's a good Eagles offensive line they're facing. Mm-hmm. I think it's an Eagles O-line that might have issues as the season goes along. I feel better about them after week one last week than I did going into the season. But, you know, it's early and we're seeing that. And the Falcons were highly active up front. And we said before the season, Tack McKinley is going to have to be a big factor for that D-line to take the next step. And it has needed to take a next step for a while. I thought McKinley was highly active in the game tonight. But, you know, honestly, having the speed behind those guys amplifies everything as well. With Deion Jones back healthy, Ricardo Allen, who's, I don't know what his 40 time is, but he plays fast. Mm-hmm. Keanu Neal plays. There's a lot of speed right up the middle. They're right behind Grady Jarrett, who's one of the quicker defensive tackles in football. It's a fast Falcons defense, and it was not a fast defense a year ago. And I don't know if there'd be a trickle-down effect from that or not for how the defensive line plays. Usually it's the other way around. D-line's going to impact the back seven. But what stood out to me was just the whole collective defense tonight. This is exactly how the Atlanta Falcons want to look.
What did you think of Wentz's performance in this one? It was ugly at times, and it was spectacular at times, and I can't really tell where that sort of evens out to when you're considering him as an MVP candidate.
Normally I would, because I'm very analytical, and I would say, well, that evens out to about average, wildly up and down. sometimes you make exceptions. Sometimes it's just one of those nights. You have all these guys getting hurt. Wentz mm-hmm. is taking a bunch of hits for a variety of reasons. To play the way he played down the stretch on one of those nights. There was a book I had when I was a kid, Good Days and Bad Days. And little NFL stars wrote little stories about big NFL stars wrote little stories about, hey, this is my best day and this was my bad day. You know, my worst day. And I read it page for page and came away thinking, yeah, sometimes you just have bad days. That was the lesson. I'm thinking all game, if I had that book, this would have been Carson Wentz's bad day book. It just was that kind of atmosphere for him. And to play the way he did down the stretch, I think is absolutely remarkable. And to me, that boosts an MVP talk for him, because when they needed him to be valuable, when they had nothing else around him, he was as valuable as he's ever been. He took over that game in the fourth quarter.
I was going to say, he was that Nelson Aguilar losing the ball in the lights. It was that close to being...
Do you think that's what it was?
That's what he said it was after the game.
Oh, did he really? Well, that's interesting, because that ball was not... That ball was thrown more on a rope than typical. Usually when you lose in the lights, it's overhead. But one thing, I don't know what the lights are like in Atlanta. I know they're different mm-hmm. because that stadium looks different. You can see it on TV and on film. So I believe Aguilar when he says that. But that's interesting, because usually you lose it in the lights on arcing balls. That was on a rope a little bit.
I was going to say, I think it maybe got on him faster, but it is. It's an unusual background to look back into for a receiver in that stadium. But the bottom line is he didn't catch it, and then he made a really nice catch a couple plays later on that 4th and 14.
And from what I could see, and we didn't get the greatest replay angle on that, but I'm pretty sure that was a 5 vertical route concept, which I was going through something with a defensive coordinator. We were watching film a few months ago, and I can't remember what the coverage was, but I said, well, what if they do this? What if they do that? And I was just talking hypothetical, and I think he thought I was trying to find, like, kind of needling him a little bit. And at one point he finally said, well, that would be 5 verticals. Nobody throws 5. You can't throw 5 verticals. And he's right. You can't, but you've never seen it. I think that was a 5 vertical route, which is basically 4 verts with the check down also being a vertical. Mm-hmm. So it's a Hail Mary is what it was. It's like an all go Hail Mary. It's an interesting call. It's a great call.
Yeah.
Great call, because it worked.
Absolutely. The Falcons ran a little robber coverage there with Keanu Neal in the middle of the field, and
they were playing the sticks, and then Keanu Neal robbed down on the sticks. I think is, again, we didn't get a great replay angle on mm-hmm. that, but the point is, I guarantee you, when they installed their sticks defense, and sticks just means everybody line up at the first down and guard that line. A lot of teams play it. Falcons have been known to play it on long yardage situations. I bet you they never thought they'd get 5 verticals against it. They didn't have an answer for it. There were more guys downfield than defenders by the time the ball was in the air.
Mm-hmm. Other side of the ball in this one, and I guess we'll start with the game-winning touchdown here, which was just it was just so beautifully executed. This 54-yard screen to Julio Jones.
Because all game long is a chess match, and Jim Schwartz's strategy for chess today was, I'm going to come after you. I'm going to try to knock over all your pieces. We're going to blitz. Which, by the way, Philadelphia did that on notable snaps in week 1 against Washington. And mm-hmm. you wonder if we're maybe seeing a little bit of a philosophical shift from them. We said coming into their season, their 4-man rush, it's still one of the best, but it's not what it has been in recent years. You know, just something to keep in mind. They blitzed a lot tonight. They went after Atlanta. They had a lot of success. They do cover 0. That's something Schwartz does every game. He doesn't do it a lot, but he does it in certain places in the game where it plants a seed of doubt in the quarterback's head. Hey, we might get cover 0 here. We have to account for it. This game, though, they had taken it on. They were doing it tactically, not just as a way to change the tempo or plant the seed. And Matt Ryan finally recognized it, and they checked into the perfect play. And I would love to know how that check came to be, if that's already built into their system, or if that was a conversation they had with Cutter and Ryan on the phone on the sideline, or whatever it would be, Greg Knapp, their QB coach. It'd be interesting to know if that was already in the system, or if they installed that check in the middle of the game, knowing they were getting all these cover 0 looks. It was the perfect call against it.
Yeah, this was just a magnificent game down the stretch here, and just a great play there. After look, this was a bit of a struggle for the Eagles. Otherwise, they really went after Ronald Darby. You saw Matt Ryan really putting his trust into Calvin Ridley at this point, a smallish receiver who is kind of becoming like a contested catch type guy downfield. But man, the Falcons needed this one at
yeah,
home.
Yeah, they did.
At home with the Eagles kind of running out a lot of second stringers because of the injuries. This was one, you don't want to say they need is putting it strongly. They still could have gone 14-2 if they lost tonight. But this was one that was really nice to have for them.
Teams view their season in fourths. We have our first four games, our next four, our last three, quarters of a season. For their first quarter of this season, this was one they needed.
All right, we'll have more from Sunday in just a second. The MMQB podcast is brought to you by DraftKings. Let me ask you, is there anything better than watching football? Of course there is. Watching football with a DraftKings lineup on the line, especially this week. DraftKings, the leader in one-day fantasy football, is giving new users a free shot at over $1.5 million in prizes with your first deposit when you sign up with our code MMQB. Draft your lineup and feel the sweat like never before. Every run, throw, and catch mean more with a DraftKings lineup on the line. It's simple. Just draft your lineup, stay under the salary cap, and see how your team stacks up against the competition. And by the way, if he's healthy on Sunday, this is the week Chargers wide receiver Mike Williams is gonna take off. Plus, all new and existing users get a deposit bonus up to $500. That's some extra cash to play with this football season. Nothing adds to the sweat of watching the game quite like having a shot at over $1.5 million in prizes. Download the DraftKings app now and use code MMQB. For a limited time, both new and existing users can get a deposit bonus up to $500. New users, don't forget to enter our code MMQB to get a free shot at over $1.5 million in prizes with your first deposit. That's code MMQB only at DraftKings. Minimum $5 deposit required. Deposit bonus requires a 25 times playthrough. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. We're also brought to you by Legacy Box. You know, every Christmas, our family tradition was to gather around and watch a local public access holiday special featuring my mom's preschool class in which my little brother was enrolled. It was fantastic. We had a confused Santa, kids literally tripping over each other, and so much nose picking. It was an old VHS tape, though, and because of that, it had been years since we saw it. That is, until we found Legacy Box. Legacy Box is the world's largest, most trusted digitizer of home movies and photos. Send your Legacy Box filled with old home movies and pictures, and they'll do the rest, professionally digitizing your moments onto a thumb drive, digital download, or DVD. They have easy-to-follow instructions and safety barcodes included for every item. You'll receive all your original recorded moments back, along with perfectly preserved digital copies. Plus, get personalized email updates every step of the way. There's never been a better time to digitally preserve your memories. Visit LegacyBox.com today to get started. Plus, for a limited time, they're offering our listeners an exclusive discount. Go to LegacyBox.com/save to get 40% off your first order. Go to LegacyBox.com/save and save 40% today. Get started preserving your past. All right, Andy. Rams, Saints. This one did not live up to the billing of the NFC title game rematch because Drew Brees ended up going down. It just looked like he completely mangled his hand on Aaron Donald's giant hand during a first quarter play. So we saw a whole lot of Teddy Bridgewater running the offense in this one, and they just don't have the firepower to keep up with the Rams, even on a day where the Saints defense played quite well. But I guess looking forward, if Breeze is going to miss significant time, and we don't know at the moment, we do know that he was having trouble just picking up a football on the sideline on Sunday. But what can they do with Teddy Bridgewater in this offense to sort of, you know, it's not going to be as good, but how do they keep it going here?
Well, I think theoretically they can do everything they already do, and they're just going to do it at a much, much lower level, and it's going to look a lot different. And it did already in this game, and I know Bridgewater was rusty coming in. For what that's worth, you know, Bridgewater did play in Week 17 last year, and he's been getting reps. I mean, we give Teddy Bridgewater this benefit of the doubt because a lot of people like him personally, which that's good, you know, good for him. That's earned. He's got a wonderful reputation, and we hated to see what happened to his leg injury. In reality, though, when other backups come in, we don't say, oh, they're rusty. We say, oh, look at the offense with those guys, and it's not the same. And it was not the same with Bridgewater. Pocket mobility was not good. Vision downfield was not good. His arm's already average at best and probably a little below that. Now, Drew Brees has shown you don't need the world-beating arm in order to execute this offense, but Drew Brees is one of the best field readers and anticipation passers who's ever played. Bridgewater struggled with that when he was in Minnesota, and I think that's going to be an issue, Gary.
How do you feel about the Rams at this point?
The Rams offense has not looked good the first half of either of their last two games. To the degree that I've almost thought, boy, blueprint, we talked about the Rams blueprint a lot. Hey, it's out now, quarters coverage, six-man fronts. It's not always that cut and dried, but Carolina last week dropped into eight-man coverages a lot against the Rams and had a lot of success, and that's what the Saints were doing in the first half. So we're seeing some common themes in the way the Rams have struggled now. To their credit, in both games, they've come out after halftime and really reestablished their identity. They've gone to their staple plays. Obviously, that involves a lot of play action. Robert Woods, Brandon Cooks, Cooper Kupp, those are great on-schedule receivers. They're well-coached. Mm-hmm. They execute well their attention to detail. If you're out of rhythm, those are the kind of guys that can get you back in rhythm. What's different about this Rams team than others is that their interior offensive line is now comprised of pretty much all first-time players. Brian Allen at center. Yeah, and he's Brian Allen has struggled against in a phone booth, and he's struggled against bigger body guys. Kaywon Short gave him trouble in week one. He was better today, but he's not out of the woods. Note Boom at left guard, you wonder about, and I don't know this. No one from the Rams has said this to me, but I bet they have some wonders and worries about him coming into this season. And now, if I don't know what Austin Blythe's status is, but if he's gone at right guard, then you're looking at another backup in there, Jamil Demby. It's a lot of youth. That interior offensive line is a critical piece for their outside zone running game, and that's everything they're built on, including their play action. They didn't run the ball on outside zone in this game, Gary. It was all toss plays to the perimeter, after snap, sweeps and tosses. Why? Because you get your tackle pulling, and it's either a wide receiver or a tight end as the other main blocker. So they basically ran by hiding their interior offensive line. It worked in the flow of this game. That's not going to work next week against Cleveland or anybody else, because that's something you'll prepare for as a defense. So I'm a little – Rams have some issues to address. But look, they're 2-0.
Yeah, they are, and they've beaten two teams that Panthers on the road is a pretty legit win, and beating the Saints, obviously, is pretty nice. It's funny, Brian Allen and Joseph Noteboom, you almost get sort of polar opposite players, Allen being the guy who is kind of the overachiever, the heady technician type of center, not terribly physically gifted, and then Noteboom, you get the opposite. You get the really physically gifted guy who maybe still figuring things out at this point. But that is certainly something to watch going forward.
Rams' defense looks good though, Gary.
Yeah. Yeah, that's Dante Fowler's given them, sort of the best that you saw from him last year, which is pretty good. And then Clay Matthews is making the occasional play.
Yeah, Matthews is playing the strong side. Fowler's playing the weak side. Fowler's a good weak side player. I think he's good, not great, if we're talking physical traits, but good, not great is still good, and that's more than good enough. He's been very good against the run. When the defenders around him are playing well, he can be a splash player.
And should mention, had another blown call in this game, so we'll look forward to more rules changes next offseason.
That one had a little bit of an impact, didn't it? Yeah, that's right, more rules. Well, they've changed that rule. That one just wasn't enforced properly about how you blow the whistle.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, I don't know.
That's on a technicality, too, because that whistle, that blew, from what I could hear, that whistle sounded like it blew once Cam Jordan was into his run back. It didn't blow, like, immediately. Like you could assume the touchdown was there.
I mean, there needs to be, like I always say.
It's almost like an inadvertent, if there's an inadvertent whistle, isn't there some kind of rule? I want to say there's, I would have to look it up. There's, I don't want to be wrong. I want to say I saw a rule once where if there's an imminent touchdown, they can be it can be awarded to them. But yes. I could be wrong on that.
I think
the
that
point
is
that was
yeah.
Okay, that was. I thought that was an imminent touchdown. There just happened to be 70 yards between him and the imminence coming to fruition.
Oh, that was too bad. And look, we're not gonna say it cost the Saints the game, but it was a slugfest at that point. It was a very close game.
Absolutely.
Let's go to a slugfest here. Broncos Bears in Denver. I don't know, Andy. Mitchell Trubisky.
Well, yeah, I was going to make a joke that you're going to launch into Mitchell Trubisky here, but you're actually doing it for real.
He worries me more and more every week. I keep on lowering my expectations, and he keeps on moving underneath that bar. And that's, I mean, it's legitimately scary. He is, look, as far as I know, the guy is very well liked by everyone in that building, and he's a good dude, and everyone wants to see him do well. And this is just ridiculous. Do you know what their single touchdown scoring drive this year has consisted of? 10-play drive, 9 runs, 1 penalty.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, Trubisky's one handing it off. Let's not remove him completely from the equation. But you are right. I think there are big concerns on offense. Now, remember, though, they're facing Vic Fangio, who has talent on defense, and they're playing at home in Denver. Mm-hmm. And I've had coaches around the league tell me Fangio is not only difficult to play against, we talk about that all the time on the show, but when you have coached with him and he knows you, he's especially difficult to play against, which is probably true with any kind of coach. They become harder to play against when they know your inside operation. But Fangio is especially good at that. And if anybody knows the blind spots in Mitchell Trubisky's game, it would be Vic Fangio.
Yeah, this was look, this game was an offensive slog. It was, you know, you talked about the bad days, just having a bad day. It seemed like it was going to be just one of those days for Joe Flacco. Now, obviously, it has a lot to do with the Bears being great on defense. But, you know, they got down to a third and goal, and they were down a touchdown, and you sort of airmailed the throw that ended up being intercepted by Kyle Fuller, and that felt like it was it. His last drive, he converted 2 fourth downs to get the Broncos in the end zone, and then the Broncos jumped off sides on the point after touchdown that was the potential game-tying kick, and Vic Fangio said, let's go for it, since the ball was going to be placed on the 1 on the half the distance to the goal. And by the way,
the Bears jumped offside.
So yeah. Brandon McManus actually pushed the kick, even though the Buster Screen had jumped offsides and sort of gave up on the play once he was trying to get back. But yeah, Broncos got the ball on the 1 for the 2-point conversion. They went for the what seemed like at the time was going to be the win, and they went 5 wide. And they went with an empty backfield, and Flacco made the play. It's a nice little bounce
interesting. Back. That's interesting that you would get 1 yard closer and decide, okay, now that's the play, and we're going to go for it now. And then we got a great pass play that works if we're on the 1, but we don't love it so much if we're on the 2.
Everyone run a one-yard little hitch. That was it. But, hey, it worked. And, look, there was a very controversial roughing the passer penalty thrown on Bradley Chubb that gave it certainly altered the last drive of the Bears. They probably do not get points on that final drive if that call is not made. But once again, we see Mitchell Trubisky with his back against the wall make a play, which is just, I mean, I don't know what they have to do. I don't know if they have to tell him, I don't know, have like a special scoreboard in Soldier Field that shows the Bears are down 4 points and 8 seconds left in the game, on every play and then just watch him do this.
I think that they might be willing to try just about anything at this point. Again, let's not, sky's not falling, and it's something to be said. And I'm just kind of playing devil's advocate with you because I know how you feel about Trubisky, and I agree with what you're saying. But just for the point of it, there's 14 games left. Mm-hmm. To get a win in a game where you play poorly, I do think there's something to be said for that in the NFL, especially early in the season when everyone's working out kinks, but that's going to express themselves differently for different teams.
Yeah, I mean, let's be honest. Packers defense is looking like it might be very good this year, and going to Denver, that's a tough place to play. So Bears get that victory. Eddie Pinheiro, by the way, still perfect on his kicks this year. He hit the game-winning 53-yarder.
That's a big deal for Chicago.
Yeah, that's the... had the Vikings not outbid them for Kare Vedvik, I don't know how this would have worked out in the early season for the Bears.
You're waiting for me to talk on the kickers? No, I've already pitched in a little bit here. I'm waiting for you to go to the next game.
All right.
I was indulging you back there.
Let's go to the Colts and the Titans then. And I want to ask you, Andy, obviously you were so high on Jacoby Brissett coming into the season. He played very well in Los Angeles last week. This is an offense that's not asking him to do a ton. What's your assessment of him so far through two games here in 2019?
Yeah, I want to know. I actually wrote this in my film notes watching this game closely today, or I guess it would be in my live game notes, not my film notes. Mm-hmm. But I want to know why they're not asking him to do a whole lot yet. How much of that is about him, and then how much of it is about just the flow of the game that they've found themselves in? My guess is it's about him a little bit, and the Titans' defense, they show you a lot of different stuff. And to play underneath and conservative against them, I understand why that would happen. And there were plays in this game where Tennessee's defensive backs were outstanding once again. And so I thought Brissett did what the game demanded that he do. And there were times where he extended the play. The starting place with this offense, though, right now, Gary, is the running game and their offensive line. Mm-hmm. 34 runs, 167 yards today. Some of that was Brissett extending plays on his own, but a lot of it was Wilkins and Mack, especially Mack. Mack's the feature guy. Wilkins had the big run in the game that kind of changed the game, well, iced the game or swung the game mm-hmm. for the Colts. It got him up ahead late in the fourth. And that was a Rashawn Evans misplay, by the way. That was a bad gap assignment by him on Tennessee. But it's a running offense right now, and that's a good place to start. Quentin Nelson, he looks like an MVP candidate.
Yeah, no, he is a he is just absurdly good. That was Brissett made the play late when they needed to put up points late. He did lead that drive. He did finish off that drive with the touchdown to T.Y. Hilton. So he's done what he's had to do so far, which is a nice spot to be.
He's an accurate thrower. That's one thing I really like. He has that power arm, which is what I've fallen in love with. And he's accurate, and I think he's learning to control the speed on his ball a little bit. There are times where he is a one-speed thrower, only has a driver in his golf bag. You have to adjust that in the NFL. And that touchdown to Hilton, that was a good illustration of kind of adjusting the type of throw for the situation.
And this is, Adam Vinatieri. I'm not sure what's going to happen. We're taping the show. It is early in the morning on Monday, and he hinted that he has an announcement to make today, and folks are wondering if that will be a retirement, considering he missed two more PATs today.
Is he a first ballot Hall of Famer? Probably depends on who's in his class when he's nominated, right?
Yes. I he's a sure Hall of Famer.
Correct. And if he's not, it's the same reason I think Devin Hester's a sure Hall of Famer. If you're not putting him in, then you're saying nobody at his position could ever go in.
Yeah.
Because he's the best that's ever played his position.
But by the time you hear this show, you might know better than us right now. Adam Vinatieri might have played his last game. Let's go Packers Vikings. And this one got off to a really good start for the Packers offense, and it looked like it was going to go smoothly, but it still felt like kind of A little bit improv heavy. It still felt like Rodgers doing the Rodgers stuff, and it was working out early. And then it just completely shut down for the last three quarters of the game for Green Bay. And it's like they're still searching for it there.
Yeah, Packers' first three drives, 19 plays, 171 yards, a whole lot of points. Last 11 drives, 50 plays, 164 yards.
Yeah, this is still getting worked out, but luckily for them, their defense is sort of carrying the day at this point.
And would you think they would have taken that if we go to them back in June and say, hey, Mark Murphy, president of the Packers. Hey, Aaron Rodgers, more powerful than president of the Packers. Hey, hey, Matt LaFleur, head coach of the Packers. You know, your offense is going to be choppy. In fact, it's not even going to be quite choppy. It's not going to look very good the first 2 weeks overall. And your defense will carry you. Will you take that? Would you take that? I bet you they'd say, yeah, we can live with that. We trust that we can get the offense on track.
Yeah. And
because that defense has been a question for so long.
Absolutely. And look, we talked about with Trubisky the tough matchups to start. I mean, going to Chicago and then hosting the Vikings, those are two great defenses that they've played so far. But they have work to do, and I guess so does Kirk Cousins. He was awfully shaky today and just a brutal, I think it was a throwaway attempt on a first and goal when they were down five late in the fourth quarter that ended up basically, it didn't quite seal the game at the time, but it really did cost the Vikings a chance to win the game at that point. And it looked like a throwaway and he just didn't throw it far enough. And Kevin King went up and got it.
I've heard that Cousins can get through bouts of nervousness, has to deal with that sometimes, which astonishes me when you're one of the highest paid players to ever play, how anything could ever make you nervous in your life again. But I guess that's maybe a good commentary on him that he cares and loves the game just as much. But, he's a streaky player. Kirk Cousins is a streaky player, and they understand that. That's why they're starting with the running game and what they're doing. But today, the running game produced for them, and it wasn't enough. So they have to figure out here's what we're going to see from them. I almost guarantee you now. Their next out, who do they play next week? Just out of curiosity, I'm going to pull it up here.
I was just looking that up before. They host Oakland.
You just happened to be looking up the Vikings schedule just a second ago.
I was looking at the entire schedule, and that was a matchup I just took note of.
Okay. Well, they play against Oakland next week. I guarantee we're going to see a lot of first down passes for Kirk Cousins because that's what you need to do to get him on track and comfortable. And I think they'll be pretty deliberate about it early in the game because this formula, if they're just to play great defense and run the ball and hope Kirk Cousins does enough, Mike Zimmer probably wants to play that way, but I'm not sure that's the style of quarterback that Kirk Cousins is.
The other noteworthy thing in this game is we had the first touchdown taken off the board by a pass interference review. It was an automatically reviewed play. They ruled that Dalvin Cook had run out and basically just set a pick to free up Stephon Diggs in the end zone. It was unusual, and I think no one's particularly excited about this, but our Kalen Kaler had done a piece on it, just talked to people in the locker rooms after that game about that play, and one thing Tremont Williams mentioned was you get down to the red zone, all you get is pick plays, and it's nice to see one of them called, and it was a fairly obvious call. We would be talking about it as a missed call today if it had not been flagged.
I had one head coach, and I will definitely not say who, because this would be a tactical disadvantage if this got out, but he said we don't want to even run pick plays because they're so inconsistently officiated. I just don't know what I'm going to get.
It's fair enough. I could see that.
Yeah, well, I mean, some teams make their living off of that. Remember this, too. They're not going to call the same penalty five times in a row. I don't care what it makes for bad television if you do that. There's a subconscious human behavior involved with that. So sometimes the most penalized teams are the ones that are also standing last. And you had Ravens a few years ago, Seahawks a few years ago. I would run pick plays if I had an offense. Easy for me to say. I've never had to own up to a play call, but I would roll the dice and trust that. I don't think they're going to call offensive pass interference very consistently, very often.
Between that blindside block they called on the Browns receiver screen last week, you wonder if maybe the defense is getting a little bit of help now in the NFL, but probably not that much. All right, we got a few more games to go here, but before we get to them, just a quick reminder one more time, there's an all-new lineup, not that new anymore, it's been like 6 days, but it's a new lineup, it's a newish lineup of the MMQB NFL podcast. Every Monday, you will get this show recapping all the Sunday action. On Tuesdays, Albert Breer's mailbag. So send those questions in if you have a question for Albert. Jenny Vretis and Connor Orr with the Weekside podcast every Wednesday, rounding up news from around the league. Andy and I are still together every week. Our show is on Thursday. It is the deep dive show. We look ahead to the biggest games of the week and break them down. We also look at some of the big X's and O's trends from around the league. And we have a mini mailbag. So if you want to send a question in, just send it to talkback@themmqb.com. And then Friday, Jonathan Jones, the Shoot Your Shot podcast, doing a little bit of offbeat stuff, catching some of the news from the week, also talking to some folks from around the league about football and non-football things.
He had Julio last week on the show.
He did. Yeah, I mean,
a long time with Julio too.
Just Julio Jones, because they like talking to each other, and it was an interesting conversation.
Yeah, well, that's what the podcast is for.
There you go.
His podcast, not ours. Ours, we would never get Julio Jones to talk to us.
No, and you know what? He's right to do it. He's right to turn us down. I don't even know if we can get Jonathan Jones at this point. But
no, not after he got the Julio interview.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, make sure if you are not already, all those shows, they're free. I mean, you shouldn't have been paying anyone. If you have been, stop those payments. Tell the credit card company not to put the payments through. But they're all free. Subscribe to them. They will be in your feed every morning. You can't get better than that. The MMQB podcast is brought to you by Roman. Guys are terrible at taking care of their health. Whether it's a knee injury, bad back, or something worse, guys are usually more comfortable rubbing some dirt on it than seeing a doctor. I'm guilty of it myself. That lower back pain? Well, if you don't think about it, it'll just go away, right? The same is true for erectile dysfunction. Studies show 70% of guys who experience ED don't get treated for it. Thankfully, Roman created an easy way to chat with a doctor online. With Roman, you can get medical care for ED, if appropriate, from the comfort and privacy of your own home. You can handle everything online in a convenient, discreet manner. Getting started is simple. Just go to GetRoman.com/MMQB and complete an online visit. If your doctor decides that treatment would be appropriate, they can prescribe genuine medication that can be delivered in discreet packaging right to your door with free 2-day shipping. Guys, go talk to the doctor. Erectile dysfunction can be tough to tackle, but it's really important to get checked out. With Roman, it's easy to connect with a doctor. Just go to GetRoman.com/MMQB to get a free online visit and free 2-day shipping. That's GetRoman.com/MMQB for a free visit to get started. GetRoman.com/MMQB. All right, Dallas offense, Andy. You are bullish. You are giddy over what Kellen Moore is doing. And Dak Prescott, another impressive game in this one, went out to Washington. And look, they've beaten now the two NFC East also Rams, and certainly you know people will point that out. But this offense looks really, really good through two games against NFL defenses.
Totally revamped offense. I don't know if I've seen a team transform its scheme from one year to the next. And I we'll have to study this Washington game closer, but I can tell you what I know it's going to look like. A lot of motions, a lot of different formations. Really good route combinations that distort the rules of zone coverage. Just in simple things they do, the way they come off the ball in Dallas. I don't think I've seen a team transform its offensive identity so thoroughly from one year to the next without changing players, certainly without changing quarterbacks. And Dak Prescott has responded really well. We'll find out. There's a lot to go with this Cowboys offense. And Kellen Moore, no one's ever schemed against him. They haven't had tendencies to watch his film on yet. So he's at an advantageous position right now. That'll change. But so far, it looks pretty impressive in Dallas.
Yeah, it was, they got Devin Smith on a deep one for 51 yards. Michael Gallup got way behind Josh Norman on a play a little bit later that Dak just missed him on. But this offense is cooking right now. And it was a bit of a sluggish start in this one. It took him until halfway through the second quarter to get on the board. But once they got going, they ran it up quick. 31-21 victory over Washington.
34 runs for 213 yards. Prescott had 69 of those yards. One thing that Kellen Moore will do that Scott Linehan didn't do is call design runs for Prescott outside of the red zone. Dallas has almost only used Prescott's legs in the red zone. That's not necessarily true anymore, which is funny because the time that when I first met Kellen Moore, that was one of the things we talked about. And I just said, what's the philosophy behind that? And he told me why they felt, to get more value for running Prescott in the red zone. You want to maximize the value of his legs. We don't want to take the risk. He didn't tell me he didn't give me any notion at all that he disagreed with any part of it. But clearly he feels that you can use your quarterback in more areas of the field.
Yeah, I mean, he had a, they were on the edge of field goal range. They had a third and one, they were on their own side of the field at that point. They had a third and one. And they ran a little read option, and Dak Prescott runs for 42 yards, and that's a pretty nice thing to be able to do.
Can I just say one other thing that's probably gonna? It's a little bit of rabble rousing here.
Please do. We love rabble rousing. Yes.
Well, first of all, until like a year ago, I'd been saying rebel rousing my entire life. Like you rouse the rebels to get, which doesn't that seem like that makes more sense?
Yeah. If I had ever doubted that it was rabble rousing, yes, I guess that would make sense.
I tweeted rebel rousing. That's a hard way to find out you've been saying something wrong. Yeah. I know.
everyone's here's nice to correct you on Twitter, though.
Yeah, it was Will Brinson from CBS that corrected me first, and he did it gently, and I didn't have the heart or the guts to look at the other corrections. and I was also just so charmed that I'd gotten away with it for so many. I mean, I was 32 years old at the time.
Yeah,
that's a long time. But not that you're saying rebel rousing when you're 8, but I'd been getting away with it for at least 10 or 15 years. What I'm going to say to rouse the rebels right here is, if they with the way they're scheming offensively, I don't know if they're going to feel a year from now that a big-time running back is mandatory in that system.
Yeah.
And they just obviously made an investment in big-time running back. And I'm not saying they did the wrong thing. I'm just saying that Ezekiel Elliott was inherently more valuable in the old offense than this one. Not to say he's not still valuable and could still be their most valuable player, but they're not going to be as dependent on him as they were before because they just have so much more to offer in their passing game now.
No, I think that's sort of an obvious thing we've seen through the first 2 weeks. I mean, it's no longer that kind of offense that leans so heavily on Elliott, which is the reason we all thought they had to sign Elliott this offseason.
We hear that he's this, supposedly he's this elite receiver, and he had big receiving numbers last year. He hasn't, he's not used that way. He's not used like Kamara's used or Barkley's used. They haven't asked him to do that before. It'll be interesting to see if maybe that becomes a dimension of the offense, if indeed he is as good of a receiver as it sounds. A big part of that, though, when they say good receiver, they might mean he's good at catching the ball and turning and running, which I would imagine he would be. You've got to be a good route runner for that to mean anything in an expansive offense, if that's going to be a big part of their offense.
Well,
we'll see.
You also wonder the fact that he missed all of training camp this summer, if they were going to do some sort of expanded new role in the passing game, that's something he'd really need to be there for. I mean, that's
great point.
That's, running backs, usually you could just show up late and just do your thing. But so we'll see. That might be something they add going forward here. Bills Giants, I don't know, Josh Allen gets the East Rutherford sweep, Andy. beats the Jets last week, beats the Giants this week. A much more even performance this week, too. He had to sort of turn it on late against the Jets. But, Bill's doing some good things in New York.
This will be really interesting to see the film, because Josh Allen was not very good against the Jets. They won the game, and that's great. And as I've been saying, it's something to be said for winning when you're playing poorly, especially on the road. And Josh Allen looked like a complete rookie all over again in week one, like he did early in his rookie season. What you don't know with Allen is, what's he not seeing? What are the throws being left on the field? What's coming off schedule or late, really, in his case? And that's what we mean by off schedule. I'm eager to see that, because that's not sustainable long term if that's the case. Buffalo's defense, by the way, Gary, looks outstanding.
Yeah.
It's one of the, and maybe they haven't faced a great offense yet. I don't know. I think the Jets have a chance to be that when Darnold's healthy and rolling, but they certainly didn't look that way against Buffalo at all in week one. And now the Giants, who I don't think they're a great offense, but they're still NFL competition. The Bills' defense has been outstanding so far.
And look, Buffalo, they've won two road games. 49ers, yeah, too. They're 2-0, and both those wins came on the road, and they'll host Cincinnati next week, and this has a chance to be a nice little start to the year for the Bills.
I want someone on Twitter, by the way, to tell us if anybody in the history of the NFL has ever opened two games at the same stadium on the road to start their season. Or really done it. I'm sure that's happened. Like, teams have played in the same stadium back-to-back weeks. But the Bills have played in the same stadium 2 weeks in a row on the road.
Yeah.
They'll have – who did the Giants – were the Giants – who did the Giants have in week one again? I am drawing a blank on it.
Giants went to Dallas.
Dallas, that's right, of course. So the Bills have played in Giants Stadium more than the Giants have this year.
There you go.
That's Buffalo's home stadium.
Maybe hey, that is New York's team right there. New York State's only football team is the Buffalo Bills. So
yeah, Josh Allen got screwed by people in our business on that, by the way. He said he immediately said, I'm just kidding, when he said Buffalo's, you know, or we're New York's team, whatever it was that he said. It wasn't, yeah. It was an innocuous little joke, and it became the headline.
That's always been the joke around here, though. I grew up around here. It's a hilarious joke. Everyone should make it more and more. Let's go Seahawks-Steelers here. Seahawks are 2-0. They squeaked by the Bengals last week. They go to Pittsburgh this week, early start time, and get the win. But obviously the big story coming out of this one is Ben Roethlisberger goes down with some sort of, it seemed to be a non-contact elbow injury, which is never good for your 37-year-old quarterback. Mason Rudolph came on and did some pretty good things and did not get a lot of help early on in his first run here of major NFL action. But he made some plays. He flashed a little more athleticism than I think a lot of people thought he had. And you know, he has a fairly live arm. I don't want to say a terribly live arm, but he's got a starter caliber arm here.
The same concern is in place, though. Juju Smith-Schuster, 5 catches, 84 yards. That's fine. You'll take that. That's a solid performance. That's a good performance. Everyone else at wide receiver combined had 4 catches for 40 yards. And now Roethlisberger's out. It's not an expansive system. Maybe Rudolph might have a live arm. I don't know if it's a live season without Roethlisberger.
All I know is Dante Moncrief heard the things that you were saying about him, Andy, and he is not responding well.
one target, and it doesn't appear that he caught it.
No, he not only didn't catch it, he knocked it into the Seahawks' arms.
Somebody caught it, though. So,
yes,
okay.
It was caught by a human being who was also on the football field. The issue, he's had so much trouble creating separation, and he finally did run a really nice route, created separation. It was going to be an easy first down throw, and it just went right through his hands, and Seahawks intercepted it. So,
I don't mean to gloat, but the tweet that everyone got on me for, which I didn't know there were all these Dante Moncrief fans all over. I said, he's so average, he's bad. He's so average, he'd almost be better if he were just bad.
I am actually, so I was always, we've talked about this, I was always a big Dante Moncrief believer. This is the year that's caused me to, the last 2 weeks have just caused me to completely step off the bandwagon, which I always thought I was alone on. But when Andy tweeted that, I looked around and saw all these wonderful friends on the bandwagon with me. And now we're all getting
really high on him. Colts were high on him as a third round pick and just never quite came to fruition.
Yeah. All right, Andy, I'm high on the lightning round. I think it's still a lightning-ish round, but let's see how we do. We did legit lightning round on the deep dive show last week.
I know, and I want music under that. Now I've set it on the air, so you guys have to respond because nobody responded to my music idea email, and I think it would be great to have some NFL Films type of music or whatever we can get away with.
We could.
Whatever's not copyrighted, I guess.
We gave the plug to Peaches and Herb at the top of the show, so maybe if we ask that, nicely.
Does that strike you as lightning?
They can play Reunited underneath the lightning round here. Maybe.
Ugh, jeez.
All right, Cardinals Ravens. This was look. Lamar Jackson will never play a defense like he saw with the Dolphins last week. The Cardinals played him as if he had arms and the ability to throw the ball upfield. He looked sharp again. This was another good performance for the Ravens, and they are sitting 2-0, and they kind of look like by far the best team in the AFC North right now.
They do. Jackson looks very good. And then Kyler Murray on his side, you know, his legs are really not a factor still. I mean, they were not a factor in this game again. Yeah. He doesn't have any rushing yards. His numbers were good, which gives me more optimism than I thought I would have because of all the pressure looks that you get when you face Baltimore. And not just what you're getting, but what you have to prepare for, too. You have to game plan for those pressure looks, which means if you're a young player, there's somewhere in your mental capacity. You're spending energy and time thinking about those during the week going in. You know, we talk about young guys, oh, they think too much or they have too much going on. Well, Baltimore makes you have to play that way. And for Murray to go out 25 of 40, 349 yards, almost, I don't know if he quite almost brought him back, but you know, it was a respectable competitive game by the end of this thing.
Kept him hanging around. There's something to be said for that going on the road to Baltimore for the rookie. Chiefs Raiders. So Raiders jumped out in this one. They were up 10-0. They broke the Chiefs streak of scoring in the first quarter in 22 consecutive games. The Chiefs then scored on the first play of the second quarter. They had a 44-yard touchdown from Mahomes to DeMarcus Robinson, and they went on to score on their other three possessions, score touchdowns on their other three possessions in the second quarter, put up 28 points. It was 28-10, and then everyone just stopped scoring in this one.
What happens, those 28 points, when you face a defense that really doesn't have much of a pass rush and tends to be in similar looks from snap to snap, and one that you faced before, twice before, if you're Mahomes.
And it was no Tyreek Hill with the shoulder injury in this one. DeMarcus Robinson really made a couple of plays that I did not think he was capable of making. He looked great in this one. Ended up with a 6 for 172 and 2 touchdowns. Mecole Hardman, who was kind of the, you know, pegged as sort of the next Tyreek Hill type of guy, ended up getting behind the defense for a 42-yarder. He caught a one that would have been a 72-yarder had it not been called back by a holding call. So the Chiefs seem like they will be pretty much just fine while Tyreek Hill is out. Chargers Lions. This was another one, like the Trubisky game, like the Flacco game, it seemed like it was going to be a bad day for Matthew Stafford. Some of his bad habits, forcing throws late downfield, up the middle of the field, sort of came back to bite him. But Lions defense kept them in it, and they end up pulling it out in the end, 13-10 over the Chargers in Detroit. Chargers, by the way, they Ty Long, their punter/kicker, missed two field goals here, so they will at some point probably need a full-time place kicker.
Detroit probably feels even sicker about what happened in week one because their defense was good, great, in fact, for most of that game. And then the game just slipped away from them, and that was to their fault. It's not like something weird happened. They didn't play well enough down the stretch. You got to play four quarters. But we're seeing what this Lions defense can maybe be. It might be 10-20% better than we all thought it was. They have an identity. They have a very clear identity. Big, strong guys up front, man coverage on the back. It's a Patriots model.
Yeah, it's funny. They gave up. The last points they gave up were a very fast drive with 25 seconds left. It looked like the Chargers were going to have to run out the clock, and they ended up converting a third down and went on a quick blitz when the Lions were sitting back. Maybe that's their problem. when they're sitting back and trying to contain, they just give up too many yards here, and it ended up with a Chargers field goal going into halftime. That made it 10-6, but the only points were a Kenny Golladay from Matthew Stafford touchdown in the fourth quarter, and that held up 13-10 Lions. Texans-Jaguars, Gardner Minshew, this was some ugly football for a good portion of it, and he sort of just came alive in the fourth quarter, ended up driving the Jaguars down. They scored. They were down 13-6. They scored a touchdown. They went for two with 30 seconds to go in the game, and Leonard Fournette came up about 3 inches short of the goal line on a little run there, but I don't know. It was a fun, brave fourth quarter performance here.
And I'm sure the Jaguars hate that Carlos Hyde for Houston, 20 rushes, 90 yards, sustaining run game, just little chunks here and there, positive yards, kind of controlling the flow of the game on that side of things, just the way this game played out. But, you know, Hyde was there last year. I happen to think Hyde's a better talent than Fournette, but it did not go well with Hyde and Jacksonville. I don't think he endeared himself very well to those people.
No, and, yeah, I don't know, Texans squeak one out. I mean, look, the Jaguars usually play them tough, and they have the short week, so nice win for the Texans here, even if it came a little bit ugly at this point. 49ers just went into Cincinnati and just sort of smashed the Bengals. This was not particularly close at any point in this game. It was a 41-17 final, and it was one that you could sort of, turn off around halftime.
Cincinnati's going to have a tough year. Look, I think their offense looks really well designed. I'm excited for what it means for them, but they don't have the personnel to succeed right now. And it starts with their offensive line. I don't know how much you can get on those guys. They just don't have the talent up there. There's been injuries. It's makeshift groupings now. And with A.J. Green out of the lineup, their receiving core is also below average. It's nice to see John Ross playing better. That's a lot of Bengals talk for a day where they got smashed, though. Maybe we need to focus on the Niners a little bit here.
Yeah, Garoppolo was better in this one. Again, it all came kind of easy for the 49ers today because Garoppolo was... they got the win in Tampa last week, but he was shaky. He was pretty scattershot with the accuracy. Patriots-Dolphins, last one, Andy. This one played out, I think, exactly as everyone anticipated it would play out. 43-0, Patriots. I don't even know what to say about this one.
Took a little longer. The 13-0 at halftime took a little longer for it to play out the way we thought, but... Can I admit one other thing?
Yeah.
And this is a purely football conversation here about Antonio Brown. I saw on the bottom lines, I didn't watch this game, but I saw on the bottom line 4 catches, 56 yards, and that son of God dang, he's playing well. This is working out for him. I don't want to see this thing work out because I don't like what he did in Oakland at all. And to see the touchdown he had, I've thought of you, Garrett, because he scored it exactly the way that we've talked about him, with Richard Sherman bringing this up to us, AJ Bouye bringing it up. Yeah, how he gets away with these little push-offs that you can't see, that you used to not be able to see at all because there's no replay. Well, even when there's replay, I guess they're still fine for him. He is great at the nuanced body movement, and that's how he scored his touchdown. It was a talent play. Didn't need to know the offense to catch the back shoulder. It's a good start for them in that tandem, Brady and Brown.
Yeah, we'll see.
On field, start.
We'll see what unfolds this week with Antonio Brown, because certainly it's always something. All right, Andy, that's a wrap for our show. I'm not going to talk to you again until we do the Thursday show. It'll be a while. Don't call me, is what I'm saying.
Okay.
Not until we're ready to record. All right, the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast is Andy Benoit and me, Gary Gramling. We are produced by Shelby Royston. SI's executive producer or podcast is Scott Brody. Ben Eagle is director of editorial projects and product. Mark Mravick is executive director of the MMQB. Research help from Reed Foster and Ryan Taylor. keep up with our entire lineup of podcasts 5 days a week by listening and subscribing to the MMQB NFL podcast for free wherever you listen to podcasts, including the MMQB.com, SI.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, radio.com/10things, Stitcher, TuneIn, and other podcast providers.